...questioned him about my imaginary invisible handgun. Like I said, the B-team are more dangerous than the A-team, just like sweating dynamite is more dangerous than Semtex.
"Do it," he says. "Do it very slowly, or I'll shoot you."
I very slowly lift the right side of my jacket and mime unhooking a non-existent pistol from a non-existent belt clip. Then I lean over sideways until I nearly topple over and lower my hand towards the roots of a tree. Finally, I straighten up, still moving slowly, and turn round, raising my hands. My first reaction is, a man without a face is pointing a shotgun at me. Then I realize that he's glammed up, his head masked by a shimmer of random snapshots of other people, like something out of a Philip K. Dick novel. Other than that, he's wearing jeans and a gray hoodie, just like a million other men in and around this great capital city. The only deviant part of the ensemble is the tactical shotgun.
"Take two steps downhill until you're on the path," he tells me. "Then kneel with your hands on top of your head."
My heart, barely under control a minute ago, is pounding, but I do what he tells me to do. Arguing with a shotgun isn't clever. I manage to kneel with my hands on my head, which is harder than you might think when the ground's uneven, you're amped up on adrenaline, and you're over 30. And wait.
"Don't move," he says.
The sun beats down on us as we wait in a frozen diorama for almost a minute. Then I hear footsteps and a jingling sound from behind.
"Don't move,"
repeats Mr. Faceless, as someone takes hold of my left wrist and clips one ring of a pair of handcuffs around it.
"Got him, boss," says another male voice.
Shit, I think, tensing and ready to make a move if the opportunity presents. But they're not total idiots, and they've already got my other wrist.
"Now lay down," says Mr. Faceless.
What can I do? I take a dive, making a controlled sprawl forward on the dusty cycle path, thinking they wouldn't be doing this if they were going to kill. Mr. Faceless's companion plants one knee on the small of my back and thrusts a sickly, sweet-smelling wad of cotton under my nose. Me? The lights go out. From the voice transcript call log, new annex. Click.
Angleton.
Angleton. O'Brien here.
Pause.
What have you done with him?
Pause. What?
Have you checked your email?
I don't believe... Excuse me.
Pause. Well? Dry chuckle.
He's a clever boy.
And that's an interesting distribution list on the second message, isn't it? What have you set him up for this time? Pause.
A task I would perform myself were I allowed to, my dear.
Bullshit.
No, you must understand. I'm no more permitted to read the Fuller Memorandum than you are permitted to read and revise your own articles of service.
But you sent Bob out with a fake.
Yes, he's the hare to lure the greyhound, or more accurately, the mole after him. I expect their identity will become clear tomorrow morning, in the course of the Bloody Baron Brown Bag session, which I, for one, can heartily recommend to you as the cheapest entertainment you'll see all week.
Angleton, shut up.
What?
You've forgotten something.
Yes?
Bob's been suspended on pay.
Impatiently.
Yes?
I called Boris.
And what has that to do with the price of cheese?
Boris says his firearm was recalled, and he doesn't have a ward. He left it with me this morning. He's on the outside, and he's naked. Have you heard from him?
No.
I tried to phone him a couple of minutes ago. His number is ringing straight through to voicemail.
Pause.
Oh.
I think you'd better make sure that your greyhound hasn't actually caught your hare. Otherwise, the auditors are going to be handling a couple more inquiries.
Icily.
Are you threatening me?
You know better than that. I merely note that if Bob doesn't make it home tonight, we can assume that Club Zero have him, which would rather blow the wheels off your little game with a Bloody Baron committee, wouldn't it? Not to mention the collateral damage.
Pause.
Yes.
So?
Pause.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to tell Major Barnes to put his merry men on notice, those of them who aren't playing cowboys and Indians in the hills above Kandahar. Then I'm going to locate Bob. Alan can take it from there.
I want to come along.
I wouldn't dream of telling you to stay away, my dear, not with your specialist expertise. The problem is...
What problem?
I was building a waterproof case to hand over to Internal Affairs for prosecution before the Black Assizes, trying to map the Mole's contacts. Cultists are fragile. If they commit suicide, we may never find their accomplices.
Angleton, would you rather lose Bob?
If you must put it that way, no. But remember, in the endgame, we are all expendable.
I'm so glad to hear it.
As for you, would you like to make yourself useful?
How?
This little interruption has, as you reminded me, disrupted certain plans, but not, I hope, irretrievably. On your way to hook up with Alan's boys and girls, I'd like you to go and have a glass of wine with a friend of mine, and convey a proposition to him. It'll put me in his debt if he takes it, I'm afraid, but I think it's necessary. I'll email you the details.
Who are you talking about?
Nikolai Panin.
End of call log. I'm dreaming. I'm looking out across a wasteland of rolling ground, grey and crumbly as lunar regolith, beneath a starry sky. There's no vegetation, not even stunted cacti or lichen crawling across the rocks that dot the ground. In the distance, I see a low wall, writhing across the landscape like a dead snake. It's as grey as the ground, too. The stars... I can see at a glance that this is not Earth's sky. A lurid band of orange and green swirls across half the void, bisecting it with a smoky knife a million times brighter than the Milky Way. The stars sprinkled across it are eye-stabbingly visible, several of them as bright and red as Mars. They cast a harsh and pale radiance across the sloping desert floor. This is not the skyscape of a planet quietly orbiting a star in the suburban spiral arms of a regular galaxy. I'm looking at the view from a world much closer to the active core of a galaxy, or globular cluster. And it's an ugly, elderly galactic core, deep in the throes of senescence, a blaze of dust and gas spewing across the heavens from the dying exhalations of supernovae. I try to turn my head, but my neck doesn't want to work. It's very strange. I can't feel my body. I don't seem to be breathing or blinking, and I can't feel my heartbeat. But I'm not afraid. Maybe I'm dead. In the distance,